questions first. And that was incredibly funny, but it's part of a slippery slope where men assume the right to talk over you, to not listen to you, to tell you how it's going to be, to explain reality. What surprised me when I wrote that essay is that I started out with a pretty amusing incident, although that one that's indicative of sexism and kind of conversational bullying. And I ended up talking about rapes and murders, the ways that women are literally silenced, deprived of their powers, etc. I think it's important that we look at all this stuff together. It begins with these microaggressions. It ends with rape and murder and what Italian feminists call femicide.
On our show recently, we featured the voices of college women who have been fighting back against sexual assault, both the incident and then the inability or the refusal of the schools to punish them. Your take on the way schools in this country have handled rape on campus?
It's been pretty damn pathetic in a whole lot of ways. One thing is that they tend to worry a lot more in many cases about the well-being of the perpetrators and the victims. Another thing is that they shifted responsibility for preventing rape from men not to rape to women to do all kinds of things to not get raped, which we don't do with any other crime. And, and then they haven't pursued these things seriously. It's also kind of crazy. It's like, okay, if there's petty vandalism on campus, maybe that's a campus issue. But if there's a felony crime that involves, a woman being strangled, a woman being brutalized, why is that not turned over to the legal system, which is there to deal with those things? The idea that it's an in-house incident. But it's been mishandled or overlooked, not handled at all for decades, forever. But what's amazing is because these young women rose up, they said, this is not acceptable. This is not a legitimate way to deal with it. Because they use social media, their voices, the mainstream media, their organizing to say, this has to stop, this has to change. They're really radically changing how it's being treated and exposing
the
universities, which are universities from California to Rhode Island, from Florida to Alaska, and saying, this is going to change, and they are changing it. This is a very exciting time in feminism. I think that we're shifting things profoundly.
Rebecca Solnit, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Her new book is called Men Explain Things to Me, and that does it for the show. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Dina Guzdar. Special happy birthday to Mike DeFilippo. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Mate.
Yeah, that's right. And this is Finn with you right here on WUSB Stony Brook. And I just want to say it is 6 p.m. on a Tuesday. And, of course, that can only mean one thing. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Tonight is the fourth of a series of programs from the Netherlands recorded at the Ulm 2013 Hacker Camp. This program aired on Almroep 104.7 FM, a radio station formed especially for the event. Attendees could also hear the audio of the station by dialing 104.7 on their DECT phones. What we're going to hear tonight is the conclusion of a special two-hour edition of Off the Hook, the hacker radio show, which normally airs over WBAI. This edition, however, was only heard on the radio station at the camp until now. Well, yeah, has just begun the first day of talks. Talks are going on right now, as we mentioned. Julian Assange is coming up at 10 o'clock, which is pretty damn cool. But there's three more days of talks after this.
Wait a minute, Julian Assange is up at 10 o'clock.
Okay, let's clear this up because a few journalists have made this mistake. They've come and they say they want to interview him and meet him, and I don't think they realize that he's still in the Ecuadorian embassy in London. How the hell could he make it over here and get back there before his curfew or whatever? No, he is actually appearing on this magical device called a video screen. And that's how we will see him. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to talk back to him. Talk back and forth.
Yeah,
I think we should.
Yeah, we can ask questions to him, so we are able to talk back.
We can talk back to Julian Assange. How about that? Yeah, so you have to come to Ulm to talk back to Julian Assange.
We used to be able to do that just outside a tent the last time we had a conference in the Netherlands, a camp.
This is a good actually.
He was here just 4 years ago.
He was here 4 years ago at HAR.
Raising money for WikiLeaks.
Yes.
Isn't that something?
And talking.
And
yes.
Many of us contributed seed money to WikiLeaks.
Sure. And that's before it all hit the fan in 2010.
Yeah.
When we tried to have him as our keynote speaker, and then, that didn't go so well.
At Hope.
You didn't have a magic video screen?
No, we didn't have a magical video screen at that time, unfortunately. We weren't able to work that out, but we did have Jacob Applebaum give the speech instead for WikiLeaks, and it was pretty well received.
Different sort of magic.
Kyle, we met Julian last year in London, right before he went into the embassy.
Yeah, so?
And I'm not making accusations, but we did talk to him about various security issues that he has to worry about. One of which is being poisoned, obviously, and you have to wonder, being in the embassy like that, if how careful he has to be. He can't just simply, order KFC or something from down the road and expect it to arrive untainted.
Sure there's a lot of interesting things he has to do, basically to stay alive, stay human, and there's probably a whole host of procedures he goes through to stay healthy. I remember one story when we were meeting with him that he told, I don't remember exactly where he was or what was going on. I believe it was during that transition from house arrest, or maybe right before, but he had had a meal, and there was a very small ball bearing in his casserole or whatever the heck it was, and it broke one of his molars.
Mm-hmm.
Like very, very badly. So you had to have an emergency extraction for that.
Keep in mind, this is England, and ball bearings do appear in various places. Yeah,
could have been buckshot.
Is it part of the British diet, ball bearings?
It usually isn't. And you have to, these are the things you have to worry about. We take it for granted, but in Julian's situation, he has to worry every single moment of the day, because when they do something, it'll be when you least expect it.
And when stuff happens, he probably has to wonder, is this something done purposely against him, or is it just a random act?
Even that, yes. Even when something weird happens, you're wondering, are they messing with me right now? And that takes its toll. It really does. Mm-hmm. So, we can think about him being holed up in the Ecuadorian embassy for so long and those various things that he has to deal with. But it really is, it's not a pleasant thing. It's not something that I would wish on anybody. And I just hope that that situation somehow resolves itself. I don't see how it can. Not the way that that our governments are taking it, meaning the U.S. and the U.K. governments. The amount of police forces that are present outside the embassy, for instance, is insane for somebody who is guilty.
Not charged with any crime.
But, even if he is guilty of a probation violation or whatever, whatever it's called technically, that he...
House arrest.
House arrest. He just violated that.
House arrest.
So many people do this. And, the case I bring up is that of the Libyan embassy in London back in, I believe, the 80s, where somebody, they never found out who, somebody fired a shot from a window and killed a policewoman in London. Killed a policewoman! The entire embassy was allowed to leave without even being questioned.
That's a very different case.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not a different case, because that's murder. They killed somebody. It's a horrible thing.
I'll tell you the difference.
It's much, much worse.
The difference is that those people were diplomats already, and they had diplomatic immunity, and Assange is not a diplomat.
Well, we don't know who it was that fired the shot. It could have been somebody inside the embassy that did not have diplomatic immunity. Nobody was ever questioned, and the UK government allowed them to leave. They didn't have to do that. They did not have to do that, but they did. And in this particular case, the UK government is basically spending every cent it has to make sure that Julian Assange does not walk out of the Ecuadorian embassy. That's how important it is to them. And I don't think it has anything to do with Sweden.
Hasn't Julian Assange volunteered to be questioned by the Swedish government right there at the Ecuadorian embassy in London?
Yeah, and apparently they have such a busy schedule they can't make
They can't
that
come
happen.
There and interview him.
I don't know what the
question
reason.
Him for this investigation for crimes he's not even been charged with.
Yeah, so when
alleged
you see
crimes he hasn't been charged
when
with.
When you see what happens when a rumor begins that Edward Snowden is on an airplane, all right, when you see what the U.S. government starts when something like that happens, you know that it's not the truth you're hearing when they say, oh, he's perfectly free to walk out the door anytime, and it's, you know, just go to Sweden and be questioned. Nothing's going to happen to you. I you know, there might have been a time when I believed that, but the U.S. government's actions and the U.K. government's actions since then have convinced me otherwise.
So in 1 hour, less than an hour, Julian Assange is going to address this conference live. And talk with us over some sort of Skype connection or something.
Assuming
like that.
Assuming the connection doesn't break, yes.
Yeah. And all right, I think this is really, really significant, considering that he was at a similar conference here in the Netherlands in person 4 years ago. And this is, I think, whatever he says tonight is going to be significant, and the conversation that takes place is going to be noteworthy. So is that going to be broadcast live, by the way?
Yeah, it's going to be broadcast live.
That's excellent. Where can people find that?
TV.nifhack.tv.
One more time?
Sorry. Hang on. TV. Mm-hmm. .nifhack.
Spell that.
N-E-I-F. Hack.
N-E-I-F.
Hack.
Hack.
Dot
NL. NL. Okay.
Yeah. What does NEIF mean?
It's a company called Nick Heff, and they have some abbreviation on their name, especially for these kinds of events.
So basically, if you're listening to this radio show somewhere in the world live, if you keep listening to this stream, you will hear Julian. And if you go to that particular address it was just given, you'll be able to see Julian live, which is more than I think most TV networks are able to offer. So that's why it's really cool to be at OHM.
Yes.
You should be here if you're not here. But
well,
you can,
it's too late.
There's no more tickets.
It's sold out, okay? And
well, this is why it's so important that these events exist.
Yeah, Bernie, you almost didn't get your ticket.
I got my ticket 5 hours before they ran out of tickets.
Wow. Wow. We were warning people.
I thought they were not going to sell out.
And we've been telling people, buy your ticket because they're going to sell out.
I was so confident. I made my plane reservations, and then I was like, I'll buy the ticket.
I don't understand how you
can hours
make
later.
Plane reservations before you buy the ticket.
I just
plane
assumed
reservations
the tickets
always be there.
Yes. Kyle, didn't we make the ticket purchase first and didn't know when we were going over until
I just want to point out, I think it's actually Nifhack, NIFHACK, not there's no E in there.
NIFHACK.
You guys sort this out, okay?
There must be an easier way somewhere. An easier way will come soon.
OHM2013.org probably also has links to all of this.
Correct.
Okay.
All right. And the schedule. What time is the talk?
10 o'clock.
10 o'clock. 10 here?
Central European time.
Yeah.
So.
GMT plus two?
Let's talk about OHM a little bit, what we've been through so far. So far, we've been through a lot of rain, a lot of wind, a lot of heat, and a lot of cold.
Well, you've been here the longest, I think, of all of us, right? Didn't you arrive on Saturday?
Well, Kyle and I actually bicycled. Get this. We bicycled from Amsterdam on fixed gear bikes.
How hip.
Fixies.
That's a pretty far trip.
Were there brakes on these fixies?
Yeah, coaster brake.
Okay, aww. Well, you kind of cheated. But
that's not a fixie if it's a coaster
brake. I don't know what you're talking about. What does that mean? What is that?
Explain that, Mitch.
You just mean you had one gear.
One gear.
So it wasn't fixed gear, though.
Yeah, so fixie means that there's a direct drive with no free wheel. So as you pedal forward, the rear wheel goes forward. As you pedal backwards, the rear wheel go backwards.
It's directly connected. So if you were going forward on the bike and you would lift your feet off the pedals would keep spinning because they're directly connected to the wheel.
And if you stop spinning, the back wheel stops.
Hold on.
We rented these damn bikes, and they said fixed gear bikes, okay? I think they're fixed gear bikes.
This explains a lot. I was amazed that you were able to rent fixed gear bikes, but then I thought, wow, Amsterdam really is hip, so
we'll investigate these bikes later and
from
have a qualified
certain
bicycle mechanic.
You're not as hip as we thought of.
We were not doing, like, ironic skid outs, but it was fixed in the sense that there was really one gear to play with and then stopping and whatnot.
The little inclines you had were difficult to go up.
It was nice. It was really nice.
Yeah, it was
cool,
great,
trail.
Actually.
Like, it was basically going through the countryside and stuff. As soon as when you get out of the city, which is kind of intense, because even though there are dedicated bike lanes, there's all of these like traffic signals for bikes. And if you're used to just bicycling in traffic, it's much different because you have bicycling traffic and then you have like mopeds and like small engine vehicles on your bike lane, which is very strange. And you have to negotiate all of that and people. And it's just crazy. I was a bit stressed, but and we were trying to plan the route as well, and it was a bit of flying by the seat of our pants.
Yeah, we were in Amsterdam. We realized we didn't have a map to get here. We had to figure out all the bike routes, and they all have names, and it was pretty crazy. But we finally did it. We got onto the, as Kyle said, we got onto the nice country bike paths and went through farmland, and it was very pleasant. No major hills or anything like that. It did take a lot longer than we thought, though.
It would have been more pleasant if you'd had a bike intended for that kind of travel.
Well, I find that when we mention this to Dutch people, they are impressed.
Yeah, well, you lied to the Dutch people.
Yeah, you're telling them you're on a fixed gear bike.
how long did it take?
It took about, 4.5 hours, 5 hours even?
How long is
well,
it?
Well, by the time we coordinated renting and getting out of town.
Well, we started riding. Yeah. It took about just over 4 hours. Of course.
We had to backtrack because we didn't want to take a ferry across
by accident, and we realized we were in the wrong country, so we turned around and went back. That added some time.
No, how many kilometers was it? Do you know?
53? I don't know.
I've heard up to 70, and I've heard as low as 60 or
'cause it was 55. About 40-something minutes on the train, although the train is stopping.
Yeah, the train is faster. There's no question about that, but I wouldn't do it any other way. And, so, you know, we might even go back that way.
So you got here in time to help set up.
We have to return the bike, so we have to go back that way.
So you got here in time to help set up?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we got here way early, and it's... It's really cool to be at these things before they begin, because you can help with the setup and you can see what changes over the days and how a community is actually built. I mean, we're talking about tents being constructed, electricity being run, internet being laid out, and more people arriving every single day. It's simply incredible. They have sewage here. They've got plumbing. It really is something to see.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody's really walked the entire site yet, but this is a pretty big event. Just the skit, like walking from one side to the other is mm-hmm. difficult. You have to plan. I mean, if you are in a far-flung camping area and you want to go somewhere, it's like, okay, I'm going to plan for walking a half hour or whatnot. God forbid you run in and talk to somebody and whatnot along the way. So, I don't know. What? Yeah.
So
where are you going? That's a half hour away.
You have to navigate the bridges.
Has anybody seen anything cool that they want to talk about?
Well, it's still early. I mean,
there's a lot of cool things.
No, I'm always impressed by some of the structures, not just tents, but the structures that people have created. I mean, I remember years where there was maybe one dome looking, structure. And now I see them all the time. People are creating these intricate, I don't know what you call them. They're not geodesic. That's not the right word. But they're like elaborate dome structures that first you build the skeleton, then you cover. I've seen at least four.
There's one made out of wood over here that's for sale.
Oh, clever.
Well, wait till you see the 2600 village, okay? Right now, no.
I heard it was evicted.
Right now, that's another story, but right now is just a picnic table. But I think with the support of the community and with everyone's help, we can build this into something much better than that and have a real village built in the next day or so. We have the land, okay? We got the hard part in Area Z, where all the zombies are, apparently. The picnic table is a major step forward, but we want to do more than that as well. We have a little tent as well.
We're going to be planning some events at this village, aren't we? What are we going to be talking
about?
Well,
on Friday, it's the first Friday of the month, we're going to have a 2600/Hope meeting. We're going to talk about the forthcoming Hope that will be next year.
The forthcoming Hope, is that what it's called?
Oh, no, that's not what it's called. It's going to be called Hope X.
Hope
because
X?
It's the 10th Hope, but we don't want people to say Hope 10 because that's
boring.
Is this
connected to the NSA called X? What is this?
Yep. No, they stole that from us.
Is this like the film X?
We had it all worked out.
Steal their logo, though.
No, they
like said it's pretty good.
They were listening.
We had the X there just like they had the X there. And they put the X right in the back.
Want that
X.
This slide deck dates February 2008. Though.
What's their thing called?
The X key score.
They stuck a date of 2008 on there, but they released it today. That could have been made yesterday.
Well, we create history.
The Guardian didn't get it today.
That X has
saying
awesome.
The Guardian is in whatever conspiracy
I'm
you're dreaming up.
I'm not saying the Guardian is part of the NSA, but I'm saying that we should be suspicious of everything.
That is an awesome.
So what is this meeting going to entail?
Okay, so basically at the 2600 village, which hopefully we'll have more than a picnic table by Friday, at around 5 p.m., we're to what?
Look, the fact that we have a village at all is awesome.
It is,
please
yes.
Please just... take that in and accept that. And is a huge, huge, huge step.
Kyle here is the village founder because he's the one to say, why the hell don't we have a village? And from that moment on, we had a village.
Right? Like, yeah. Come on. We've been to a couple of these events. It's not our first day, right?
I'm there and I'm the village idiot. But Bicycle Mark's going
to
say something.
What does it take at camp, at OM, to have a village?
Well, you go to the wiki and you say, you fill in your name.
With it take a village to make a village? It's a huge chicken and egg problem that we couldn't solve until this time.
Well, we made the village. Now we need the village to make itself into something even better.
It takes a village.
I think that there's a dark side to this camp, and I want to bring it up.
Believe me.
I heard that megaphones, people on megaphones were yelling at you to move.
How did you hear that?
I really want to talk about this. I have 104 whatever frequency we're on. I will go off on these people here.
Wait. These were not.
You listen to me. Private security?
What?
All right. Well,
this is the angriest I've ever seen you.
What did they say?
Who?
Explain.
Wait, what did they say into the megaphones?
If you turn OM upside down, by the way, it does spell who.
Who?
Yeah, just turn it upside down. See, you'll see for yourself.
Yeah.
But no, we were woken up by people with megaphones today because we were apparently camping by trees and you're not supposed to do that.
Right, the trees we said we were going to camp in.
Yeah, it's a 2600 forest, for God's sake.
In the area that wasn't marked.
And let me tell you, it was the best camping ever because we were in the shade.
You had it made in the shade.
And you don't get woken up by the sun at 6 in the morning, but whatever. Well, so
I have
now
not
we're,
seen the sun since I've arrived in the Netherlands.
Well, it does come out just to wake you up in the morning. But in any event, okay, all that is in the past. Now we are building a village in areas.
Areas,
we are going to talk about the next Hope Conference taking place next July in New York and how great that can be. And we'd like your help. So if you're in the area, please drop by at that time. And if you're in the area before that time, drop by and visit the village and help us build the village and various things like that.
So 5 p.m. Friday, 1700.
Just like every 2600 meeting, first Friday of the month. Yeah, and you know what?
Area Z is hard to find, though.
It is hard to find.
It's over the L.
and you have to climb a ridge. If someone could build us a bridge, that would be nice. But
we found some stairs. There's stairs on one side of the ridge.
There's some very nice people.
They're toll stairs. Did you notice that? There's a donation plate.
Well, because
next
people
to the steps. Whoever
risked
built this
their lives to build
to
these
pay.
Stairs. They hammered logs into the side of the ridge there. I'm not sure how they did it. And it only goes up one way. It doesn't go down the other way. And Red Hat, you refused to go up the hill or go down the hill.
Yeah, I pitched my tent on the hill, and then about 8:30 last night, as the sun was setting, I decided I didn't like the hill.
Yeah, but you won't come to our village because you don't want to go over the hill. Why don't you want to go over
too.
The hill?
It's a hill. It's more effort than I want. I wish to expend.
You have balance issues or something?
We know you're American, but for God's sake, it's just a hill.
I mean, if you put an escalator in, maybe
you live. Yeah. In a city with actual hills. This is a Dutch
that's
hill.
That's true. Maybe I'm just sick of walking up hills. Maybe that's what it is. I figured I could come to the Netherlands and it would be mostly flat.
All right. Well, we're going to put like a big donut or something at the end so that'll lure you over.
Yeah, if you put maybe something I could jump into instead of having to.
You could jump in that canal that's right next to our village. There's a canal there.
If someone built us a damn bridge, this kind of thing wouldn't happen. We'd get more people to come.
I think it's unfortunate that there's not a land bridge between Z and W or even one of those wooden bridges.
Well,
I think that would be ideal.
I saw somebody jump over that thing. It's like it's 8-10 feet
long. Yeah, you saw them because you told them
to. I offered offered this guy a piece of chocolate if he would leap. So he took off his shirt and he made a running start and he got all the way over and I gave him the chocolate. It was impressive.
Did he have to jump back?
No, because going back the other way, you couldn't get the running start that you needed. So I forgave him that.
Well, how did he get the chocolate?
How does he get back then?
I gave him the chocolate when he got to the other side.
This is something I love about setting up at this camp every time we do it. As soon as I arrived, I'm going to tell an anecdotal story that has nothing to do with your plot of land. But I decided to set up tent in Leivonville, in the Austrian Metalab village. Always a lively place with people and machines doing things.
And they have a telephone booth.
They do always have a telephone booth so I can find them.
Is Johannes here?
No.
Oh, no.
Not so far. Oh. Not so far.
Johannes, if you're listening, get over here.
Get
quickly.
Over here. Yeah, we're low on people, unfortunately, but still got the old place and the telephone booth. And as soon as I arrived to become a member of this community, I was working on, getting a stake in the ground, and I'm talking about the metal things, And immediately, someone else who I hadn't even seen yet was already pulling on the other side, putting a stake in the ground. And a girl came over with a hammer and said, "You might want this." And then she made me tea. And they welcomed me to the neighborhood.
I love hammer the tea part. Tea. The tea part is the best.
They said, "Welcome to the neighborhood." And I was like, "This is fantastic."
That's very neighborly.
I'm in the right village.
Yes. Speaking of neighbors, Travis Goodspeed is in town.
He's very neighborly.
Yeah, I don't know where he is right now, but he's around.
They give you a hammer?
Well, he's hammering some ideas into us. He's around here somewhere. I wish if he's hearing us on the radio, come on over, Travis.
Yeah, he bought a van that used to be for TV with a huge tower that telescopes up, and
he bought a TV van.
TV van
from some Channel 7 in Chicago, ABC 7.
SWLS. Why do I know that?
You're good. Mm. You're good.
But that knowledge could be replaced with something more important.
Something useful.
Can I just be impressed that a van from Chicago is set up at a camp in the Netherlands?
No. He brought it to. It's now living in Tennessee, where Travis spends a lot of time.
He bought it, not brought it.
And what does he use it for?
I've been away a long time.
He has plans for it. He's not using it for anything yet, but he's planning on doing stuff with it. It's got this pneumatic tower that, you know, it's got this gas powered tower that raises a microwave dish like 30 feet in the air to shoot to the repeater to get the feed back to this TV station. And there were racks of equipment in there, and it's just—I don't know. He's going to do something wild with it. No one's trapped.
You should write like NSA wiretapping.
There you go.
Park it in front of places.
Put an NSA logo on the side of that thing.
It'll probably be welcomed in a lot of places.
We're hackers. We buy weird things. I mean, what's some of the stranger?
You have a phone van.
Phone van, but that's not so weird. You know, that's part of the hacker world.
I don't have a phone van.
No, you don't. You don't. But it's one thing. But I think a TV van beats that. I really do. But. Well, like our friend Rob wants to buy a bus. Well, he has a bus, actually. He wants to buy a real double-decker bus.
Double-decker?
Anything else that people know of that's weird that hackers have bought? Or
do hackers only buy vehicles?
No.
I don't like this stereotype.
No,
I don't own any vehicles.
We've had tanks in previous years. I'm not sure if they were borrowed or owned.
Well, that was when the camp was at a former airbase. The tank comes with the airbase.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah. So this is a bit... there's no airbase here, so there's no tanks. It's a bit sad.
There's some really cool military vehicles. I don't know what direction this is.
I knew they'd be here.
Where are you pointing to the back of you? Yes.
On one side of the field, there's some interesting military vehicles. There's a lot of caravans. There's some interesting buses. I know the fabrication lab vehicle is here. There's, I don't know, there's all kinds of interesting forms of transportation represented here. That's part of the joy of just walking around and seeing all the different things that the different villages and displays people have set up. So I don't know. I've enjoyed them. Has anybody seen anything like particularly like odd?
There's a lake. There's a lake here, isn't there?
There's the people who helped set up collectively put up before people even got here over 70,000 RGB LEDs.
I heard that.
And that doesn't even include the ones that have come since.
I've heard there were at least 30,000 individually addressable LEDs.
70,000.
70,000 individually addressable LEDs. Now that is...
Interesting. Yeah, we have the network operations center, the NOC, and there's been a tradition of the phone operations center, the POC. And this year, I saw the LOC, LOC, which is the light operations center.
I wonder what that was. I saw a tent that said LOC. I'm like, what the heck is that? Light operations center.
Yeah.
So that's a thing now.
Apparently.
And evidently, get online and control these lights from anywhere in the world.
Where would one do that?
Yeah, how do we do that?
I haven't looked into it.
I bet you can find out.
You're working on it.
It's being properly controlled by the lock.
Okay. If you walk into the lock and say, hey, can you do this? They'll do it for you? Maybe?
Depends on how kindly you ask him and what you bring him, of course.
I want to address one light, just one light. And
One LED.
Yeah.
I just want to talk
sure
to
they'll
it.
See it from the satellites.
Uh-huh.
There's one dot, and you have to find it on the map where it is, on the camp where it is. One of the 70,000 LEDs.
Hey, Tim is here. Tim Pridlove from CCC.
Hi.
Welcome.
Yes.
You've had some experience.
I'm on 2600 now.
You're on Off the Hook, yes. On 104.7.
Oh, my God. Oh,
yes.
My God.
Now, so you've run camps in the past?
I did.
In Germany?
Yes.
So what are some of the challenges? What are some of the crazy things that happen when you try to run a camp?
The weather is bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those.
isn't there a walk?
Sorry?
A weather up? Never mind.
Oh,
does that affect morale?
It could. If your overall morale is already tanked, it doesn't really help.
Yeah.
I think if you've got a focused team and you've got motivation inside, weather doesn't really matter so much.
I think it rains a lot more in Holland, too.
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it sure rained the last couple of days. But I think maybe that's it for now.
Hopefully. It looks good.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've been quite lucky with our events in Germany so far. Mm-hmm.
I learned something interesting today. I didn't know this. You've probably talked about it on the air, but we have, among the many features of the camp, we have these porta-johns or portable toilets that are actually not functioning as toilets. They have switches in them.
Yes, people, that's... please. When you see these things, check them first, all right? If they have electronic equipment and flashing lights in them, don't use them as toilets because that's not what they're for, all right? It's extremely annoying to have to deal with that afterwards.
Those have been in use for at least, I mean, I remember them back at least, what the heck was my first camp, but...
this idea came up.
Yeah.
Was it Tim?
It was my idea.
That was your idea?
Yes, it was.
Wow. Perfect idea.
I was very surprised to see it still in operation with the very same concept, you know?
There's even large ones used for larger distribution, right? The handicapped ones are like super DC.
I haven't seen them, but that would be evolution. Yeah.
I think,
but they're also called them Datenklo. I guess most of you know what that was. It was like the original modem, the modem construction set that the CCC put out. Klo is toilet, and then, you know, because it uses all those sanitary equipment to actually plug it into the phone. Yeah, that's why it's the data toilet.
So our listeners at home or wherever they may be, I know these are like porta potties, like those portable John's closets, but with an equipment rack in them, loaded with network switches and other equipment, so that the Ethernet cables come out to the rest of the camp to provide internet access.
And it's brilliant because they're vented.
Yeah, weatherproof.
They're weatherproof.
Yeah,
and
they're cheap.
They lock.
Yes, and you can lock them. It's just perfect.
And they each have a Wi-Fi and a wireless access point on them. Most of them do.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
With a bucket on top.
Which is nice because back in 2005, I remember having to wait for someone to unlock the toilet so I could run my network cable in, and it's nice to not have to do that anymore.
I would suspect that this has expanded beyond hacker conferences, that any outdoor event that has any kind of Wi-Fi uses your idea.
Might be.
You should patent it, really.
Some corporation is going to sell this idea.
This could be the thing that makes you a millionaire.
Oh, yeah.
So, it just goes to show the ingenuity of hackers and things like that. Now, Tim, are there challenges or memorable events at the CCC camps?
Oh, it's full of challenges. I mean, just the idea of having a fully networked field is something, that you have to find solutions for. And I remember in 1999, it was... Everything was new, you know. I mean, we haven't been the first ones, you know. First one was the
HEU?
Hacking at the end of the universe, right, 1993. I think the networking at that event was one coaxial cable running from tent to tent, like 10 megabits. And, the best thing that happened was, like, there was finally data flowing over it, you know?
So what
that
is
that? Was, like, the main event.
What is the internet bandwidth connectivity to this conference here?
Here. I heard something about 10 gigabits per second.
10 gig fiber, yes.
Yeah.
10 gigabits per second.
Yeah, there's a page you can go to see the traffic, actually. The traffic, like the amount of traffic going and all that.
Know, isn't that some more than some small countries have?
It's more than Africa has.
The entire continent of Africa.
That's what they claim, and I think they're right, yeah.
This little camp here, with a few thousand hackers, has more internet connectivity than the entire continent of Africa.
How is that possible?
Yes.
Maybe there's
can't really confirm this, but I think it's at least has been accurate. First time I heard this was 8 years ago. I think that it was always the hacker camps were always ahead a bit of Africa, which is sad. You know,
it is sad.
Really sad.
It's not a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
What, there are no hackers in Africa? There's hackers in Africa.
Well, Egypt there's hackers
Africa.
In Africa. There's no bandwidth in Africa.
But can't they infrastructure? Range?
Only one third of the population of the world has internet access.
That much?
Yeah.
I'm surprised it's that much, frankly.
But things are improving in Africa. I'm not so sure the 10 gigabit is still true. you know, there's more and more cabling.
But it's more than a lot of countries.
But it's usually when once you plug it in and make it work, it's 80% spam coming in. Yeah, that's the problem. It's really a problem.
Uh-huh.
Because we are used to much higher bandwidth. For us, it's just a tiny bit. But everything that's actually finding its way to that continent is already filled with things that just don't matter.
Crap.
And you do
crap.
Have a lot of undersea cables that have come online in the last, even just the last 5 years. But
yeah.
That's coming online to the country. That doesn't mean the government or whoever is in charge of that is actually getting it out to other communities. So that's an ongoing thing as well. I've heard this for East Africa. A lot of new cables have come online, but people don't have access to them. I guess somebody does, whoever made the deal.
But you need to wire the infrastructure to the people, and, yeah. And in cases where it's rural, it's pretty expensive, and so
but know, that's a big limiter. The scarcity of networking in general, again, you know, creates a lot of creativity. And if you see what's happening with mobile payment systems, for instance, in Africa, it's truly revolutionizing the way people trade with each other. It's also very interesting to look at what is actually happening inside the continent now that they have a lack of connectivity to all those other things. Mm-hmm. Have you heard about this orange box, this Lula box?
What is that?
That's a small, rugged, bright orange plastic box that is more or less directly connected to a Google Cloud service where they have an application running. And what you can do is you can sell money by printing vouchers. So you go to somebody who's got one of these boxes and pay them whatever sum, and you get a voucher that is more or less, you know, the same amount, but it's a code. And it's also password locked. So if somebody steals it from it, it doesn't have any value. And this is sort of money you can use then to load your mobile contract or increasingly pay for other things.
So you can finance, so people can finance.
Yes, and also people can make money from it because when they sell these vouchers, they make 5% on the transaction.
So any person with internet connect. Internet connection
could resell money.
Could help provide mobile phone access to people in third world countries.
Yes.
That is interesting. You could be a part of this, people.
Lula, I think it's called. It's an orange, bright orange box.
And you could sell it if you were feeling philanthropic. You could sell it for less than the market value.
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, I think that the person performing the transaction is in the country with the box, I think. So
why would they have to be?
Oh no! That's the point. You can turn cash into something that is secure money to move around and exchange for something else.
Interesting. And
Wow!
I just bumped into this, so I'm not really able to tell the whole story here. But that's one of these crazy things that just wouldn't nobody would come up with such an idea because we're living in a totally different infrastructure.
And people that have
because it's so limited there.
People that then have this newly acquired mobile access could use that for mobile payment systems to trade, buy and sell products and services.
It's basically meant for loading your contract.
Which people use for what?
It's a way of doing electronic payments with cash. This is what it is, right? It sounds like it's a box where you have someone who's selling the electronic currency, if you will. And so you go to that person, you give them the cash, they give you this electronic currency, which you can then use to make electronic payments like to your mobile provider. So it's a different way of getting cash. It's not a mobile service. Yeah,
you use the code to put money on your mobile phone contract. Normally here you buy a card, like a plastic card with, I don't know, some number printed on it. But these cards are,
virtual.
They have to be created, transported, sold, secured, all that stuff.
Yeah, they usually activate them right in the store or something.
Yes, but first you have to bring the number there. And here you can turn cash into such a number at any time, which you can then SMS to your provider and get the money from
For people that aren't near any kind of a store where they could buy a card with
Yeah, because the only infrastructure there is mobile phones.
Yeah. That's amazing.
I'm sure you know, Tim, about this M-Pesa project in Kenya, which is taking over a huge chunk of transactions in that country because it's based on the mobile phone network and the mobile phone credit vendors, but you can now use it to just send money to anyone and and this is the first time for many people in Kenya that they've been able to transfer money electronically, which is a useful thing to do. So it's really taken off.
Yeah. These are the kinds of things we talk about here at these hacker gatherings. But Tim, now you've been involved with CCC for some time, and they've been around since 1984, correct?
More or less, yeah, or 81, where you want to count.
And they've been inspirational to hackers all around the world with the things they do, the things they talk about. But how have you seen them change over the last few decades?
Hmm.
And are they still as relevant as ever?
I'm not so sure I'm the one who can, you know, judge on the relevance of the CCC because I'm in it, so I don't know. But it's interesting that you say decades because I think the CCC has sort of changed every 10 years, more or less. First 10 years in the 80s, you know, no internet, but still, or from the start on, it was very political. It was part of the... of the left-wing movement that took over Germany on many levels too, the environmental movement and peace movement that led to the Green Party, and other things. And then in the 90s, there was the first disturbance in the force when the CCC had trouble with the state and all these the hacks, the NASA hacks that got the community itself in trouble. And it was at a certain point where it could have died. I think it only survived because of Andy taking over. He was very young then, but more or less followed everything from the beginning. And then there was this second phase where this new club in Berlin came up. First it was in Hamburg, then moved to Berlin, or didn't really move, it extended to Berlin. Andy went there, and that was this very special time where the wall just came down, East-West unification, and this particular group in Berlin, the CCC in Berlin, was basically 50-50 East and West. And nobody really cared about it, but it was just joining all those, you know, mental forces. And that was a very healthy thing. And at that time, the CCC came to a new level on influencing the German society. Before, okay, they were on the TV, more or less, those guys who robbed the bank, you know. Everybody knew them, but it wasn't really that you could continuously influence German politics. But then we had this wave of things we've been... influencing, like banning voting computers, which was already preluded here in the Netherlands with ROP, and lots of other things. And now it's totally common that members of the CCC are, making their official statements whenever the High Court is making decisions on important topics.
And acting as advisors to decision makers in political.
No, well, I mean, the CCC always keeps a distance to political parties,
mm-hmm.
but not so much to the High Court and these.
But areas. the information the announcements or the releases, the news, the information releases from CCC are often taken seriously by people in those positions.
Yeah, I think that's the result of the second decade, and. Now we have to see. I mean, CCC is 30 now. Things have changed. We're no longer the only ones. You know, in the 90s, we were sort of the only ones. There were others like Fürbot and so on. Now it's a vast array of different kinds of groups, which is good, you know, but also changes the role the CCC plays. Because before we were sort of the only ones and the cool guys, you know, like, yeah, here, hackers, we know it. Ask us, you know. It's still a bit like this, but it's changing. And... yeah, I don't really know where it's leading right now. I can't really answer that.
Cool. Well, we're glad you're here, and we're glad to have the participation of the CCC in the hacker world because they've been so inspirational to us in America, and I'm sure here in the Netherlands as well.
You know what I think? What the one of the biggest successes of the CCC was? That was the day in 2007 when everybody who came from America decided that, oh my God, we need hackerspaces too. Why don't we have that shit?
Uh-huh. I remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was really, for us, it was really like, oh, they finally got it. It was like, because we were always thinking like, why is this such a torn out scene, you know, everybody hating each other, all these security conferences were filled with police and business guys, and what are they doing, you know? because we were not used to that, and we had this totally different culture. But I always thought like this could work there too, you know. And finally it sort of worked. We have been trying to invite as many people as possible to our events, especially the Congress. And I think this third camp was sort of the turning point. And then 1 year later, we got like hackerspaces.org, 100 places around the world. It was amazing, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's cool. And I think we're still in the beginning of this reorganization of the movements here.
Tim and I were lining up to get on the shuttle buses, because sometimes a lot of people arrive at the train station and the shuttle buses are bringing us over here. And online, there were a few Americans, quite a lot of Americans, and then two Brazilians passed me. I know one of them came over. He said, "Hello, how are you?" I said, "Fine." He said, "This is another Brazilian I brought, you know, a friend of mine." And the guy in front of us, someone said, "I remember when it was special that Americans came. Now it's way beyond that, you know, and now Brazilians are bringing Brazilians. There's a Mexican flag flying near my tent, not too far from my tent."
Don't forget the Italian embassy.
Of course, I haven't seen
places in the world to go.
I'm hoping they're cooking later.
Oh, yes, they were cooking last night. And there are all kinds of places here on camp that I have not yet found, but I want to.
Well, sometimes they're on the other side of a ditch. You have to watch out.
We have, I think, only about, 20 minutes left?
A little less, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about one other story that's kind of important, and that's what happened to Google today. I think it was today. That's when I found out about it. They're changing their mind about network neutrality. Is that true?
That's what I read too, yeah.
Okay, who has a story?
I don't know.
They are providers now, and they want to prevent their customers from operating servers.
Uh-huh.
Whatever that might be, you know.
Okay.
So yeah, because servers are evil, don't you? Sorry?
People have servers?
Yeah, I mean, almost every computer is one, isn't it? I mean,
I think so.
Why would Google view that as a threat?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yes, it is.
But they sort of see it like this.
So what might be their motivation for not wanting
because
people to
do this? Because they're not giving the bandwidth to customers so that they can operate their own data centers. They want the bandwidth at their customers so that they can use more of their services.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's not a surprise. But what is a surprise, I think, is seeing them about face on this particular issue.
Well, they had to, or they would have looked grossly hypocritical.
Uh-huh. So they don't look grossly hypocritical now.
No, they do. But at least, I mean, at least they can't be just called flat-out liars. So... anyway,
all right.
What did you find that story, Mike?
Evil.
The internet here is down.
Oh dear!
No. So there's no looking up of stories.
Well, yeah, because Google has cut the internet now.
They heard us.
They heard us talking about this.
Yeah, we were operating servers.
Uh-huh.
That's why.
Let me ask the guys from different places what you think of this whole Prism thing and how that relates to tech companies in addition to governments. What's the German view on it that you can see so far, Tim?
On the one hand, I think it's a big story in Germany, but it's still not big enough for the politicians to actually react. But the main reason why they are not really talking about it is that we have elections coming up in 2 months, so everybody is really tight. But I've heard that behind the scenes, it's the business world who's going crazy and they're canceling their contracts. It's also that there are these safe harbor, safe harbor contracts that, you know, you can say that like a certain service being offered by an American company is sort of like, it's the same as if you would do it in Europe because they are, you know, taking care of our privacy laws and such. And the guys who are responsible for issuing these contracts said like, no, we're not going to issue anything and we're actually looking for ways to cancel existing contracts because we don't think that, you know, anything is in order. So big companies are pulling out of the American cloud. And I think this is a real problem for America. Not that they're going to be bankrupt tomorrow, you know, but this trend is not good for them. Because everybody's losing the trust, and they're losing the trust especially when it comes to espionage on an economy level. It's just companies are being actively searched for patent submissions and other trade secrets, and that's something that even concerns the conservatives.
Anyone else have any feelings on what's been happening over the last few months? No? No one?
Strange bedfellows. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. That
well, we talk about it all the time and Off the Hook, but I just like to
We do, and this is sort of like an edition of Off the Hook, but it's just creating strange bedfellows that even political conservatives or people who think capitalism is the answer to everything are now suddenly being seeing the light and seeing that these things really matter.
Well, mm-hmm. seeing that there are consequences.
Yes, to them.
Yeah. Well, what was it that Rob was telling us this the other day in light of the recent vote to curtail some of the NSA activity that was narrowly defeated? If you look at the people who voted to continue the NSA surveillance on that particular level, the defense contributions to their campaign was infinitely more or hugely?
Well, finitely more, but yep. much more.
So supposedly my representative, Nancy Pelosi, who's my representative, who's supposedly very liberal, voted to continue it.
Really?
And yeah, if you looked as Emmanuel was just saying, if you look at the political, I think it was the New York Times had some news journalism outlet had reported that the vast majority of an overwhelming majority of those who were voting against this bill last week to curtail funding for the continuation of this NSA spying program had received a lot of campaign contributions from defense contractors.
Yes. Military
contractors.
Yeah, this is the way things always are with our political system. The people who are politicians because their election campaigns and re-election campaigns are paid for by corporations. And of course, they're going to vote for more profit for those corporations. I mean, it's super simple.
So is it unrealistic to say that a good tactic would be to support those people who voted to curtail these activities, that no matter what their party affiliation is, even if it's not a party that we normally vote for?
Well, I mean, like with any issue, you have to evaluate how important this issue is to you. And in light of all the other issues and the other positions your candidates take, and vote for the one who agrees with you on the most stuff that's the most important to you.
Yeah, and I think this is one of the most important ones. And you always be able to find things that people don't agree with you on that might not be as important, but might be a bit more in the headlines. So this is something that I think, I don't think there's a better acid test to look at who is who might have your interest at heart and who doesn't care at all. And just use that as a guide. So that's something that I think we should.
I think this is making it more and more clear that how many politicians just don't care about anything but their reelection campaign fund.
Mm-hmm. But Mitch, almost half the Congress voted for this bill. I mean, I did not expect that. So I do find some cause for hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but if we want them to win, we need to make that a bigger number. And I think we have the momentum right now.
We only need 6 more.
Yeah. Oh, and another vote,
really close.
Too. We have to do it again.
Yeah, well, it is surprising to me that it's that close, given how things have been. But this is a hot political thing. You know, when even no matter how many how much re-election money you have, if you're going to lose because the popular vote is going to go against you. So it's good. I mean, if people are running that scared, I think that's a good thing. They might actually be responsive to their electorate. And this is supposedly democracy, right?
Has the popular opinion changed over the past few weeks? Because as I recall, the polls that were being issued at the beginning indicated that most people didn't really think that the NSA revelations were that significant.
And well, they're not because they're only collecting metadata.
Uh-huh. But, you know, if you're not guilty of something, you got nothing to worry about. And if it keeps us safe, then
do
it's
you have
worthwhile.
Something to hide?
Yeah, we all do. Everybody does. But it seems like that's changing a little bit and people are becoming more concerned about NSA surveillance and more willing to speak out against it. So I think that's a trend. I'm hoping that's a continuing trend.
I sure hope so. I mean, I was being facetious there. Of course, you know, not that we necessarily have things to hide. I mean, we're not going to divulge our passports for our bank accounts. You know, mistakes happen. And there, if you don't have any kind of recourse and you have people coming without any means of appeal and they're suspicious, there are people hired to be suspicious, anyone they look at is going to look suspicious. And this information being out there is not really a good trend. And that doesn't seem to be stopping. And even though the government is purported to be considering saying we're going to stop this, should we believe them? I mean, they were lying about it before. All these people we're supposed to trust So I don't know. I'm pretty cynical when it comes to actions by our government, especially more and more lately, because look what's happening. That is being printed and broadcast and what are portrayed in the mainstream media, I think is amazing. They had to do this. Snowden, he chose to work for the NSA. I don't respect him for that, but that he chose to go with any form of ethics that he may have personally, I have tremendous respect for him for quitting and going public. It's amazing, and his life clearly is never going to be the same or any semblance of something that we can all call, you know, normal, whatever that is. But wow, I would not like to be in his shoes, but wow, he chose to do that knowing the consequences, and that's tremendous. And there are a lot of people working for these agencies who are probably going through some similar process with their conscience. And I know that there are people in the government who are wanting to make an example of him to say, you know, look what happens when you do this. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen? I don't know. But I do hope that more people focus their energy, which we only have so much of with the time we have in our lives, for something they think is very positive, that will make their lives better and the lives of people around them. And this is where I have any kind of hope at all, is because we all have that power, and it's tremendous.
Yeah, and there are so many people who come to these things, young people who are perhaps experiencing the hacker world for the first time, and just are idealistic and new and learning new things, inventing new things. And I hope that they see some of what's been going on as inspirational, and that when they do get access to something that can help their fellow humans, that they will share that and not simply look at what stupid rules they're supposed to follow, and things that might not make any sense at all when you actually think about them. It's hugely important. And I see this community growing so much over the years, that we're talking about things like this, that it's always forefront in the headlines, what is going on in the world. It's simply incredible. Where are we on time? Are we almost done?
We've got like 5 minutes left.
Okay, 5 minutes left. With a special edition of Off the Hook. This is Emmanuel here. That's Mike over there. And Bernie, Red Hack, Mitch Altman, Kyle, Junts, Bicycle Mark, and Tim Pritlove from CCC. And we're in the last couple of minutes of our, in fact, they're turning the lights off on this, I think. Anyway, very final words before we go out for the night.
I have maybe a second to last word, perhaps, and something I've seen in regards to this topic of spying and privacy. And the first time in a long time, maybe ever, journalists of my generation who work in conflict zones, especially a place like Afghanistan, where you may interview people that are considered unacceptable by an American government or a European government. It's the first time this year where I see people coming home or passing through Amsterdam, and they're saying, I need to figure out some way so that my computer is never, ever connected to any network. They're scared. They're worried. Some of them have a strategy. Some of them don't. And, you know, of course I would say you need to come here, but in many cases they're too busy. You know, they're always out there. So in some ways I also see a role for us to play, for myself to play. If I can get myself more educated while I'm here, because the opportunities are here, that I can then tell them, advise them on what they could do as journalists, because the safety now, especially now it has come to light, the safety of their sources, of all that information that you get because you develop trust, is so much at risk, if not already lost. And you know, now that we know something we've always suspected when it comes to spying and yeah.
Yeah, so there's a topic that's, I think, really important that a lot of people are discussing here at OHM, which is not a comfortable one, and that's that the main sponsor is a company called Fox IT that has sold surveillance tools to people like Mubarak in Egypt while he was doing everything he's done, and while it's been very clear what he's done. They've since stopped selling surveillance tools. They sold that part off, but they've never actually like said anything about how bad a thing that might have been. And there's a bunch of things that this company has done that's made it very uncomfortable for me, which is why I quit being on the organizing for OHM, and I feel really angry and upset and sad about all of this. I'm glad people are thinking about this and talking about this, because I think it's really, really important who we get our funding from and how it helps them, as well as how it helps ourselves.
Well, I wish we had talked about this earlier, because this is something we can talk about for hours, certainly. And yeah. Hopefully it'll be talked about on some other radio show, and I think there's a panel?
There's a panel that I'm on. I might be the only person on the panel out of several people who has a negative view on this. So it's going to be 6 o'clock on Thursday, Netherlands time.
Okay, and coming up next is Julian Assange. Just to make things a little less controversial for a short period of time.
Easy stuff.
Yeah. Julian Assange coming up next live from London. And that's going to be
we got four minutes.
Oh, we have 4 minutes. Okay. We have 4 minutes to kill. Well, who do we want to kill?
Such violence against minutes.
What questions would we want to ask Julian Assange in this live two-way
what
video
would
conference?
You ask Julian Assange if you could? Well, I don't know. I've already asked him some questions, so I can't think of any new ones. Anyone?
Whatever you ask,
go ahead.
As long as it's not about the details of his life as it is to live in an embassy. As much as that's interesting, I would hope that any questions that come out would be more about his work and the work the organization is doing.
What we can do to help. Yeah. We as people here in a camp field in the Netherlands, what can we actually do that will help what he's trying to do?
Yeah, I mean, I do my part in my circles, and that's something people can do at every friend or family gathering. If someone is spouting facts or attempts at facts that say, you know, this man is a criminal and here's why, and he's terrible and here's why, I have facts that may argue contrary, and here's why. I can do a here's why as well, and that's...
I just find it's amazing that we've seen this this kind of morph from year to year. It started with Julian Assange, then Bradley Manning, and Edward Snowden, and then Glenn Greenwald with releases and defiance and standing up to authority and intimidation and things like that. You have all these people that are stepping up and being counted, and I think that just... It leads to more people doing the same thing. And I think in another year's time, there'll be twice as many people who have done something like this. And I really, I hope we get to meet some of them. And I hope some of them really tell us what we need to hear, and that we support them and make sure that they're not suppressed and intimidated into silence. Anyone have anything further?
Have fun.
Yes, people, please. Yes.
Jeez.
It's a hacker conference, for God's sake. Have fun.
There's a lot of fun going on here and very little sleep to boot.
The world is going to end, but not tomorrow.
Yeah, and regardless, we don't have control over that, so we may as well do all these cool things and encourage other people to, we can all help each other improve our lives.
Yes, we've either just won a war or we have 2 minutes, because I saw the V for victory thing go out. 2 minutes, okay. Oh, damn it. All right. I thought maybe it was over.
More final words.
Well, we don't have a musical outro. That's why we have to have all these final words. But
you could sing, Emmanuel.
This has been... No, I can't. This has been great, though, because I don't think I've ever done this before, a two-hour show on live camp radio, which is pretty cool. And maybe one day we'll air this in New York somehow, or
radio. We could get a ship.
We'll
and sail
a recording.
Yeah,
this.
Let me slip in an invitation for the upcoming 30th Chaos Communication Congress.
Oh yes.
Wow. 30 years.
30 years celebration, and as you might know, it's moved to Hamburg last year, and I don't know who's been there, but the 29th Congress has been. A rebirthing for this event. It finally could grow once more, twice as many people as before, and it felt much more familiar than ever.
It felt great.
So come to Hamburg. It's totally worth it.
All right. Hey, that's it for Off the Hook, the special edition here at Om Roop. And please stay tuned to 104.7 FM and do as much as you can here at Om. Enjoy. Good night. You've been listening to a special edition of Off the Wall and Off the Hook, recorded at the Ulm 2013 Hacker Camp on July 31st, 2013. There is still much traveling to go in this series, which we'll be getting to in future programs. Until then, this is Emmanuel for Off the Wall. Have a good night.
Hey kids, Finn's Revolution with you, right here on WUSB Stony Brook until the 9 p.m. hour. We're going to be speaking with from the band Kala, the great Brooklyn band Kala, Aurelio Valle, who'll be talking about his new solo project, his history in Kala, musicianship, all those great, great things, and a fascinating, fascinating interview. And, of course, his new album, Acme Power Transmission. So stay tuned right here on Finn's Revolution, WUSB, Stony Brook. We'll be right back. Yeah, that was, of course, Aurelio Valle from the album Acme Power Transmission, a brand new record from Aurelio, Superhawk, the name of the tune. And prior to that, from the band Cala, Aurelio's band, from their album Televised, Strangler, all right here on WUSB Stony Brook. We were lucky enough to talk to Aurelio the other day and record this great, great interview. Fascinating guy. We're going to throw in some great music along with it. Stay tuned to learn a little bit here about Aurelio Valle right here in WUSB Stony Brook right about now. Aurelio, thank you so much for joining us on WUSB Stony Brook. It's a pleasure to have you on the radio.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and...